Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the ball. The lob. The jam! Oh, what a monster jam by DeAndre Jordan!
The jam!
The lob! The jam! What a play from Rivers and Jordan!
Hey, what's up, man?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, good.
Can you hear me?
I'm here.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So we can just get started. Anything you want to talk about specifically today that's not there?
No. I mean, we always say it's going to be a short episode, but I really think this one should be pretty short. I really have not much to say. We'll talk about the games.
Yeah.
I don't think there are any huge takeaways. I mean, we'll probably have to talk about Blake and, you know, that
yeah.
whole thing. But
mm-hmm.
I don't really have much from either of the first two games. I don't think any real big trends. We could talk about Harris
yeah.
a little, I think. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't
this
really,
one should actually
I don't really,
be short, I think.
Yeah, I don't really have much to say about the Denver game just kind of came and went. Like, I really don't know what to say about it. It was just a loss against a good team. And this Pistons game was bad, but even then you can kind of drum it up to Griffin and Bullock, I guess. I don't know. This was a bad loss, but whatever. We'll probably talk about the Pistons game and Blake quite a bit, but shouldn't be too much.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me get it. Go and put out some Twitter questions.
Oh, yeah. I'll do that right now.
Yeah. And I'll get this started. I wonder if I should use any of these. Let me listen really quick to this. No. I'll just use our jazz crap. One second.
Yeah, it's all good.
What's up, everyone? It's the Love the Jam, the podcast, coming to you as always with Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing okay. There's some fun NBA basketball today, even though there was no Clippers, so it was a pretty solid day.
Yeah, it looks like everything, for the most part, went the Clippers' way today in the schedule. I think the Lakers were losing last I saw, but I don't know what they're losing now. Perfect. And I think the Mavericks lost, the Blazers lost, the Rockets lost in spectacular fashion, which is always a great thing to see. James Harden went 1-for-17 from three. Just a very I don't like James Harden.
Yeah.
But anyways, the Clippers also had not a great result, though. Yesterday, to Blake Griffin, a guy you may have heard of, 109-104, lost to the Detroit Pistons in Los Angeles against a pretty bad Detroit team. That's 18-23, even with the win in the East. But, you know, Blake played great. He had 44 points. 13-for-23 from the field, 13-for-14 from the line. I kept waiting for that shoe to drop a little bit for him to give us some misses a little. I know he's a 75% or so free throw shooter, but I was just hoping he'd feel some nerves. But he was great. Three steals, a block. He was just really fantastic. Shot 13 threes at 5-for-13 mm-hmm. from three. Shot more threes than Reggie Bullock, who had a good game too. Reggie Bullock, by the way, had 17-7 with five threes, including two huge ones. And really, I mean, Detroit, they got another good game from Andre Drummond. But aside from that, they were pretty crap, like up and down their roster. Reggie Jackson continues to be a mediocre player. And it was a really frustrating mm-hmm. loss just watching the game. The Clippers never really seemed to really take control of the game. That fourth quarter, they had like so many opportunities to just take the lead or really just get back into it. But Danilo Gallinari had like a four-footer, had a dunk right at the rim with Griffin on a steal. Avery Bradley had an open three-pointer. Just Tyrone Wallace had a layup at the rim. Not an easy one, but I feel like those were four possessions in a row or so where the Clippers really could have won this game. And if anything, the game was lost there because the Pistons put a little bit more space and then the Clippers came back again and Lou Williams got fouled on clear call to close the game. But there's a lot to kind of talk about this game and unpack a bit. The Clippers didn't play particularly well all game, but they did have some good performances from Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, and Gallinari for the most part was pretty decent. But what did you think about this game? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continues to get dwindling minutes, and he only played about 17 minutes yesterday. What are your thoughts about this game? Just a frustrating loss.
Yeah, this is pretty bad. It wasn't one of the worst losses of the season. They've definitely had worse, but the Pistons are not very good. They're 18-23, which is obviously, you know, well below 500, but it's actually worse than that because they were pretty hot to start the season. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think they were like 10-4 or 10-5 at one point. Like
they
started out pretty hot
too. Yeah, they were pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean they've been really bad for like a month and a half now, and like you said, the roster just up and down, outside of Blake and Drummond, is just not very good. Bullock is a shooter; he doesn't do a ton else, but he's a good shooter. And outside of that, it is desolate. I mean, Bullock is their third best player, and the gap between him and Jackson, who's a very below average starting point guard, is big. And then after that, I don't even know. It's probably Luke Kennard off the bench. I mean, their roster is just really bad. And like it doesn't fit together at all either. They have like no shooting around Blake outside of Bullock and to a lesser extent Kennard. It's really rough. So losing to them at home is not good. It was an afternoon game, and afternoon weekend games are always kind of fluky. Guys are going out. People always say there's an LA nightlife effect, and that's true, but that doesn't mean the guys who live in LA aren't going out too. If anything, it's easier for them to go out because they live around there. You know, they know all the spots. I mean, NBA players know all the spots anyway, but I mean, we don't know exactly what happened, but the Clippers have come out flat on weekends at home several times this year. So it wasn't super surprising to see that. And they were able to rally in the second and third quarters, but it was still a pretty dismal performance against the Pistons. I thought, especially again, 109 points isn't a ton to give up, but 37 in the first quarter is just outrageous.
Right.
The Pistons are not a good offense. They lost the game in the first quarter. You know, it is what it is. They roughly outplayed the Pistons the rest of the game. Not by a ton, but, you know, they did. And it didn't matter because they were down 13 in the first quarter. I mean, a lot of that was to Blake. And we must acknowledge Blake Griffin had, you know, all-star, superstar-type game yesterday. It was one of the better performances of his season. Probably, maybe not one of the better ones of his career because it was obviously still a pretty low stakes game, all things considered. But it was a vintage Blake Griffin performance, except the 3-point shooting. He was phenomenal. And the Clippers, for the most part, weren't. I think this is, outside of that, I'm not sure there are any huge takeaways to make from this game. Like you mentioned, Shea's minutes continue to drop. And I thought he wasn't very good yesterday, but I also thought he wasn't bad either. I mean, he was probably the second best starter behind Gallinari, which really just says more about the rest of the starters than about Shea.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought his defense was okay. He was aggressive to start the game. He was missing shots, but he was aggressive. He had a couple really nice passes. I thought he was fine. So him getting 17 minutes is not great. But on the other hand, I just the team looks pretty lost offensively when Lou Williams is not in the game. In his 28 minutes, they were plus 5. In the 20 minutes he was off, they were therefore minus 10. Not huge gap, but the difference with him on the court versus off is pretty drastic. And then Pat Beverly obviously provides energy, but him getting 34 minutes to Shea's 17 feels a little out of balance, just because Shea provides a passing, driving element that Pat does not. But the scales seem to be swinging against Shea. And just in general, the bench continues to perform so much better than the starters that I really do wonder if, after a few weeks of respite, the pressure might be back on Doc to switch up the starting lineup again. And I know what we Clippers fans want, which is Avery Bradley out, but that seems very unlikely to happen. I would be shocked. People asked him before the game, I don't know which reporter it was, but somebody asked him if he was thinking about cutting Bradley's minutes because he's shooting 38% from the field, 29% from three. And Doc said, I don't know that, but he's unstoppable.
Gosh.
I don't know if you saw that, but it's
unstoppable. I read that quote.
Was the word.
Yeah. And he's like, I think Doc said something along the lines of, well, would the opposition want to bench Avery Bradley?
Yeah.
And the answer would be no. They don't want you to bench him. They want you to play him because he's trash. Anyways, I thought Shea for the most part played pretty well in his 17 minutes. Of course, the entire team didn't play well in that first quarter, but Shea actually ended up with a plus 3. He was part of that fun lineup, the Shea with Shea and Lou Williams, Pat Beverly, Ty Wallace, and Montrezl Harrell that got the team back into the game. And almost brought them all the way back before sliding a little bit more to end the second quarter. But that was a fun lineup, and Shea was a big part of it. He had a really fun pass. He had a really awesome IOU pass, I remember, to Montrezl Harrell. He had a corner three, which I wish he would have hit, because that would have really spurred the Clippers a little bit more. But, I mean, I thought he played pretty well. I don't really think he played particularly poorly this game. I think he just got the short end of the stick, which it's just the theme recently. He's under 10 points per game now in his average, and he's just been sliding a bit for a while. But some of that is his timidness, and some of that is just Doc with a quick leash on him. So it's been tough, and I think both of us want him to play more minutes. Both of us want him – most Clipper fans want him to have the ball more, run more of the offense. It's just he's a point guard, and the team needs a point guard. It's just him and Lou, really, as far as – playmaking point guards, and I guess Pat to a certain extent too, but Avery Bradley is not, Bradley only played 22 minutes, but he's bad. Like, I don't think we need to talk too much about Avery Bradley this episode. We don't like him.
I will say that I've promised articles before on this podcast and then not written them, but I have the outlines for a very lengthy piece on Bradley, which won't go up tomorrow because I'm doing the game coverage, but will go up Tuesday. Hopefully he plays badly again tomorrow, so I don't really have to change much. But even if he does play well, it's all going to be the same. It's going to be pretty in-depth. And, I don't want to talk about it too much because I don't want to use any of the numbers or whatever. But he's really bad. And more even than his own performance, he's just such a bad fit in the starting lineup. And I think that's kind of one of the things that, is a takeaway here, is the starting lineup just is not playing well. And some of that is that Bradley is really bad, but it's more than him. And I think just blaming him over and over isn't really the right – it's just not good. He and Shea are a bad fit. Him, Shea, and Gortat as a trio is a horrible combination. just like so little shooting and creation and just a very bad hodgepodge of talents there. It's really bad. And at this point, I almost wouldn't mind if Doc put Pat in over Shea, even though I know that the only downside I think there is the hit it might take to Shea's confidence, which is a very delicate thing. The Clippers hopefully know that better than I do.
Right.
But at this point, I almost wouldn't mind it just because I do think Pat probably should be in the starting lineup due to energy, and he's not going to be put in over Bradley. It's not going to happen. So at this point, I think Shea is a better fit with Lou than he is with Bradley. I think Pat and Bradley is also a horrible combination, especially with Gortat, but a shakeup of some kind I think needs to happen. What would you think about switching Pat and Shea? I mean, I honestly, at this point, I wouldn't even mind it. I think it's going to happen.
It's just, I feel like it's almost an inevitability that this is happening. Even when you just look at the minutes trend, it just feels like, I just feel like it's going to happen. And maybe that's just me being kind of negative and feeling like Doc is losing confidence in Shea and slowly gaining confidence in Pat. But it feels like it's trending in this direction that eventually somebody's going to have to get, there needs to be a change in the starting lineup. Like the team is routinely losing first quarters, and there needs to be a change. And really, what, you're not going to change Gortat, really, unless I don't think Motley has gone to the point where you can think about starting him long term. They've already tried Boban, and I think that's already failed. I don't think they should start Montrez because he has such great synergy with Lou, and I don't think they should start Lou. So really the only conceivable move, and I feel like the most predictable move, is going to be Pat over Shea. And after a while, with how the starters are playing, something needs to happen. I would be surprised almost if it didn't happen at this point. And that sucks because I want Shea to start, mostly just to give him the confidence to be a starter. Mm-hmm. You know, if Shea got rolling again, one thing about Bradley, I don't like Bradley. I don't want him to start. I'd rather have Pat starting over him. But at least with Shea as that starting point guard with Avery Bradley, you could really feature him. You know, you could really run. You could really, because Bradley's not, it's not like Pat really is either. But Pat Beverly, I think, does have some utility as a point guard, can run a pick and roll. Shea at least would be put under the gun if he gains some confidence, if he gains some more, you know, strides as far as his playmaking ability, where I think he could, you know, he could run the offense with those starters a little bit more and get some reps. And I feel like I could see him eventually thriving in this role. You're right. Like, it's not the ideal position having Bradley and Gortat, you know, play a side with him. But he is getting a little bit of chemistry with Gortat. You know, there was even a pick and roll where I think he had a nice little hook shot Gortat did from Shea. You know, Shea can work with Gortat a little bit to an extent. But Bradley, you can just see people dragging off Bradley and just not caring about where he is and wanting him to shoot. That was the piss. That will be every team's game plan. Just let him shoot whatever he wants, and it's just going to hurt Shea. It's tough because – go ahead, Williams.
Well, I think that's what we hoped for when Shea was starting with Bradley in terms of him getting more reps, running the offense. But that's not really what's happened. Mm-hmm. And instead, I think what's happened is he's not regressed because it's rookie season, but – I think maybe he isn't quite ready. Either he isn't ready or the Clippers just aren't ready to trust him, and that in turn has affected his confidence. But they clearly aren't ready to give him a lot of ball handling duties. And instead, he's basically just shunted off to the corner and doing decoy stuff. And if that's the role he's going to be put in, I'd rather him do it alongside Lou Williams, who can actually find him and can actually create looks and get him set up for easy shots. And take some of that burden off him and legitimately take the burden off him instead of just having Bradley as a horrible closeout valve. I think I'd rather see him come back off the bench with Lou and play better, even if it's for less minutes and not starting, than continue to run him out with Bradley. And just, it's just a disaster right now. Again, not all of this is really Bradley's fault. I mean, some of it is Shea legitimately needs to be more confident all the time. Mm-hmm. He needs to get more reps running pick and roll and doing actions against NBA defenses, but he's not really getting that. And it's just very awkward. So at this point, I think I'm actually not just okay with him moving to the bench. I'm actually kind of in favor of it as long as there's a guarantee, which is impossible to guarantee, obviously, that it doesn't do any long-term or real damage to his confidence. given that, I'm actually happy with it because I think it'll make the bench even better. And I think just inserting Pat might help jolt the starters a little bit. I don't think that's a long-term solution, but I think I'm okay with it. It's not the ideal, obviously, but at this point, I'm going to take what I can get because the current situation is not working. And the very outside possibilities of Ty Wallace moving in, but that is definitely not going to happen. Like you said, I mean, I can pretty confidently say that they're not going to start Motley, Lou, or Harrell. Very confidently, really. They don't think Motley can guard centers. He probably can't because he's too skinny. And he just doesn't have NBA rotations and defensive schemes down yet, especially, you know, how important center is. He's just not going to be playing starting center anytime soon or even rotation minutes, I don't think. Harrell and Lou are just too good off the bench together for them to move into the starter. So it's going to be Pat. It's probably going to be for Shea. And it is what it is. And at this point, I think it might honestly be a correct move. I don't think it's the best move, but I'm fine with it. I don't know if there's much else to say about that particular issue. What do you think of Tobias Harris having a pretty quiet game? I was disappointed. I thought he at least did crash the glass, but he was not very present. He only took 9 shots in 37 minutes, 11 points. He made both of his threes. It wasn't like he was cold. He just really didn't shoot at all. I think he was 1-for-3 in the first half. So what did you think about that? Was it something the Pistons defense was doing? Was he just shying away? I really couldn't tell.
I don't think the Pistons did anything to shut him down or anything. I just think that he was gun shy, and I'm not certain why. I don't know. I don't feel like he it just kind of came and went. It doesn't really feel like he passed up too many shots, you know? So it's hard for me to say entirely what happened, but I know that he, in the scheme of our offense, Tobias can be more aggressive than what he was, and he wasn't. And that sucks because they can't guard him. You know, they can't guard anybody on our team, I don't think, really. You know, even Blake, you know, Blake can get good defensively at times when he's engaged, but they're not like, I know they hang their hat on being a defensive team, but it's because they're such a bad offensive team, right? Like, I don't find them to be particularly intimidating defensively. I look up and down their roster, and there's, like, nobody who I'm thinking, oh, man, that guy's going to shut whoever down. Andre Drummond is a, you know, I guess he's an interior presence, but even he isn't particularly intimidating to me. He just gets a lot of rebounds and is good with positioning. And that he had a 20-20 game, I guess you did feel it a little bit in the fourth quarter, but it was almost a surprise how well Drummond's stat line looked in this game,
King of empty stats.
Right.
He really is. I mean, he's not bad, but I mean, he's so big and athletic, he gobbles up rebounds, but it's kind of the DeAndre Jordan thing. They let him get rebounds. Right. He pads his numbers. He had a ton of offensive rebounds, though, and he played well. He really did damage the Clippers, but the 20-20, I mean, he wasn't that good.
Right, yeah. And
I mean, Reggie Bullock was their second-best player, and he hit the Clippers had some pretty poor defensive rotations on him. There was one really bad one where I think Lou doubled at a very poor time, like Blake in the post. It was like 4 seconds left, and he was pretty far out, and he just ran over and took a really bad angle. And Blake had the super easy pass to Bullock for a three. Mm-hmm. It was one of the ones late in the fourth quarter. It was really bad.
I think. Yeah, that was the last three that he hit. That was a really, really bad possession. And it practically put the nail in the coffin. The Clippers did come back, but I think it put the Pistons up like 6 or 7. And that was awesome. And, you know, Bullock hit some really quick trigger threes. Like, they were far, like 30 feet out. He's good. He can shoot. Like, I keep trying to rationalize losing how we lost Reggie Bullock because we just didn't know he could be kind of a positive contributor. You know, we always knew he had the NBA body. He had a good summer league showing and there was always potential there. And he had a couple of good games. I remember if I'm not mistaken, I feel like Blake and Reggie have the same birthday. And I remember one game with the Clippers, he had like, they both played really well, and Reggie had a nice game, and I think he started that game. It was his birthday game. And I remember thinking, oh, you know, he could play for us. And then we lost him. And then I kind of just let it go because I just felt like he's just a shooter who could possibly play some bench minutes, but he's a shooter. He is legitimately a shooter. That's probably all he can really do, but he is definitely that. And there's always room for that in your team. And he had 7 boards, 4 assists, you know, not like he's going to give that to you on a daily, but he can shoot. He has a quick trigger. He's not afraid, and he definitely wasn't afraid yesterday. And you got to give it to him. He hit the biggest shots, and without him, you know, they might lose that game yesterday. So I have to give Reggie Bullock a lot of credit. I've been kind of downplaying losing him, but we could use him now. You know,
they got him. Yeah, I mean, they could use him now, but we got Austin Rivers, and Austin Rivers gave the Clippers a couple good years. The first half a year wasn't very good, but he was probably about the same level as Bullock. Austin was really good tonight for the Rockets amidst their collapse to a pretty bad Magic team. He's been very good for them. I think most teams would probably have Bullock in a vacuum just because his pure shooting is such a valuable skill. But Austin's a solid NBA rotation player, so I don't think it was a bad trade. But the Clippers' defense on him was poor, and Bradley was his guy. And Bradley lost him a couple of times, especially in that first quarter. But I actually thought his defense was mostly fine yesterday against the Pistons. Bullock was good. It was really
good.
There
were just like a ton of handoffs to Bullock for his threes. Like they weren't even like they rotated it around the, you know, like it went to the weak side, blah, blah, blah. It just went straight to Bullock. It was just like Blake dribbling and then just a pass to Bullock because his guy was cheating off of him. And, you know, maybe the Pistons were playing their offense that way. I'm sure they were, but still don't cheat off of their best shooter. They only have like one shooter like on the floor for the most part, him and Kennard, I guess. But Bullock is pretty much far and away their best shooter. Give Reggie Jackson all the threes he wants. Bruce Brown Jr. played yesterday. I didn't know who he was. He played 27 minutes. I still don't know who he is. So, yeah.
He's a rookie.
He's a rookie. I don't know much about him.
He was from the University of Miami. He had a pretty bad injury, I think, the year before the draft. He was originally a first-round draft pick because of the injury and kind of a poor, I think it was his junior year, he fell to the second round, but he was considered a solid pick. I'm actually surprised they haven't played Khyree Thomas, who's their other second-round pick, who I really, really liked. He hasn't been playing that much, but he had a three, a corner three in the first half sometime. But, the defense on Bullock was not good. The defense on Blake, and Blake is a tough matchup for the Clippers, but the defense on him wasn't very good either. The only guy who really guarded him well, I thought, was Gallinari. Gallinari has probably been the Clippers' best overall defender this year, which is
awesome.
You know, a reason why he's a good defender, but I mean, that's the reason why you know, 20th or 21st or whatever in defensive rating. It's not good. He's been far and away their most impactful defender, I think, way more than Avery Bradley or Pat Beverly. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, should we talk about Blake at all? I mean, Clips Nation, if you haven't checked out Clips Nation put out like 4 or 5 articles about the Blake Griffin impact. Before it, we did a roundtable on our favorite Blake memories, which was really good. Mm-hmm. Then afterwards, Farbod had something about, from Blake's point of view, what the game was like. Sabrina talked about how he's still a star and how the Clippers are kind of missing that. Lucas showed up somehow out of nowhere with a look at how the trade has kind of panned out for both sides over the past year. So I hope I'm not forgetting anybody, but we had a lot of stuff about Blake. What did you think of Blake? I mean, the tribute video was very good. It was very weird to see him back at Staples playing against the Clippers, but I didn't really take much else away. Like the whole thing about him ignoring Steve Ballmer is just, that's such nonsense to me. It's like, I really don't care. I don't really feel any differently about the trade. People were down on Tobias, like, oh, it's like, it's one game. He wasn't very good. It's fine. What is that? I didn't have any big takeaways from it. I mean, he's better than anybody on the Clippers, but we already knew that. He's He's a star. He's going to make the All-Star team this year. I don't know if he's going to make All-NBA. He has at least has a shot at, like, the third team, probably. You know, if the Pistons don't make the playoffs, which I think is pretty likely, it might be tough for him to squeeze in there. But he's really good. I mean, he's better than Tobias Harris or Danilo Gallinari or anybody else in the Clippers. But I didn't have any super big regrets or any change of mind regarding the trade or Blake or anything. Did you?
No. when Blake Griffin got traded, like, I was super, super sad. Like, I was sad for a while. And we have, you know, evidence of this on this podcast. Like, I miss Blake still. You know, I miss his presence. I liked him on the team. I liked his fire. I felt like he was a Clipper through and through. Like, he loved the team. He loved being a Clipper. And he wanted to take the team to places that he, you know, came up short. And he still wanted to do that last year. But, you know, and this trade is not going to be judged just after a year. You know, it's an ongoing thing. But I don't regret it. I'm happy the Clippers did it. From a Clippers fan's perspective, I think it's still a good trade. And I think this is as good as Blake Griffin is going to be. And he's always going to be an injury risk. And his contract is a behemoth. And it's going to be one of the worst contracts in the league until it's done, probably. And I'm glad that Blake is healthy. And he's playing about as well as he can play. He's unfortunately, he's on a terrible, terrible, terrible team. And it was nice to see Point Blake. You know, he was running the team and doing what he could, but the team is awful. Like, it's just, he could be good. He could be on a good playoff team again, but he has nobody around him right now. And the Pistons, you know, the Pistons swung for the fences and they got a franchise type player in Blake. And, you know, it's still I don't think it's a bad trade for them either. You know, they weren't going to get much. They weren't going to get a superstar any other way. You know, it would have been difficult for them to just get a free agent who would want to play in Detroit for however many million dollars, who was like 25, like years old and in his prime. It's just hard. You know, it's not easy for a market like them. You know, Detroit's had success in the past, but they've never, you can't remember the last bona fide franchise player, like outside of the Bad Boy Pistons that, and they were all homegrown. So they haven't really struck gold in free agency. I don't know, ever? Like, have they? Like, I don't think so.
No,
so,
I don't think
So this is the way they could do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said this in somewhere recently, maybe, I don't know where, but the trade was a win-win. The Pistons needed a franchise player. They needed somebody who could sell tickets in their new arena and help them with marketing, and he's been able to do so. They're still not very good with attendance or TV revenue or anything. I know. I lived in the greater Detroit area for 5 years. The Pistons do not have a big fan base. They really needed somebody, especially in their new arena, and they got him. And Blake has done that for them as well, has been really, really good playing basketball, which is what Blake Griffin does when he's healthy. And the Clippers, I think they needed to move on from that era. And especially what we've seen with DeAndre this year, it's a good thing they didn't hold on to him. And so just a good thing they didn't hold on to that entire core. Jamal Crawford was already not very good his last year or two as a Clipper. But now, I mean, he's one of the worst players in the NBA. God bless Jamal Crawford. Amazing dude. But, I mean, he should not be playing NBA basketball anymore. You know, J.J. Redick has still been pretty good. And you see Chris Paul is injured all the time. That team was just, not only as a group, but even a lot of the individual players had kind of run their course. And I completely agree. I think Lucas pointed this out in his piece. I don't think he'd be having the season he does have if he'd stayed with the Clippers. I think he and Doc clearly didn't have a great relationship. I don't think it was bad, but I don't think it was great. It's certainly not like Doc and DJ, who still text all the time, apparently, and, you know, they're really close. It just wasn't like that with him. He and Gallo were a horrible fit together. One of the reasons I think Gallo's been so good this season is that Blake isn't here anymore. I don't know if Blake would have developed that 3-point shot here. It's possible, but I don't think he would be that guy in LA if he'd stayed. And the Clippers needed flexibility. They needed to move on. I think it was a win-win for both teams. So nothing about that game changed my mind on anything really at all. I don't really have too much else to say. Blake Griffin won that game for the Pistons with a little help from Drummond and Bullock. disappointing effort by the Clippers. I would say Montrezl Harrell was fantastic. And actually,
yeah.
We need to talk about Ty Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Ty Wallace, I don't know how the Clippers can give him more minutes. I mean, the easy way would just be to axe Avery Bradley from the rotation. But realistically, I don't know how they give Ty Wallace more minutes. But, man, Ty Wallace is really good. He needs to hit his free throws. His complete collapse as a free throw.
My gosh.
Has been bad, especially since he's so good at getting to line. But that dude is good. And Doc Rivers had the thing yesterday, also another gem of a quote read. Somebody asked him about boosting Ty Wallace minutes instead of Avery Bradley. And he's like, I forget the exact quote, but it was something like, have you watched them? Like, do you think Ty Wallace can play defense like Avery Bradley? I'm like, yes, he's better, actually. Ty Wallace is the best perimeter defender on the team, I think. He's not as versatile as Gallinari, obviously, because Gallo is so much bigger. He can cover bigger players. Gallo can really cover 3 through 5, even some shooting guards. But the Clippers don't have a wing or guard defender as good as Ty Wallace. He's their best guy. I don't think it's even close. He's the best player outside of maybe Lou at actually getting into the paint and finishing there. He's a solid passer. He doesn't have the ball in his hands much this year because he's playing with Lou and Beverly. His assist rate is actually very low. I was kind of surprised. But he doesn't turn the ball over very much. He makes smart decisions on both ends. He's just really good. He deserves more minutes than he's been getting. I understand that it's tough for those minutes, for Doc to come up with those minutes, but I'm glad he's found a steady spot in the rotation because he's really good. And I would not mind seeing more of that lineup we saw that you mentioned at the start of the second quarter yesterday, which, with the four guards and, alas, no Mike Scott. I think Mike Scott has generally been useful to the Clippers. Even though his shooting has fallen off a cliff, I generally like the little things he does. I think his defense is fine. I think he battles. I think he generally plays with energy. And even when he's not hitting threes, he does provide a lot of spacing. So even though there's been a lot of Clippers fans dumping on him, I think he's generally been a positive presence for the Clippers.
Yeah.
But if cutting him from the rotation means more Shea and Ty Wallace, I'm fine with it. And yeah, I mean, Ty played 14 minutes yesterday. He was a plus 16 in those minutes. And plus minus is usually pretty wonky for single games, but you could feel every bit of it. They were just so much better when he was on the court on both ends. And it's a shame he didn't play more. I would have stuck with him longer. I know they had to bring in Tobias, and Tobias is your guy. But Ty is just really good. I mean, do you have anything else to say about him? I've been driving the Ty Wallace bandwagon for a while, but he's just
the biggest thing, one, like, he was running the team in the fourth quarter. I always thought Ty Wallace's biggest strength possibly on our offense would be with the ball in his hands, but it would always be difficult with players like Lou Williams being also featured in the second unit. But yesterday he really shined. Like, he kind of took control that fourth quarter, starting with that awesome dunk that he had to start the fourth quarter. And then the ball was just kind of in his hands. He's kind of, you know, he was a playmaker in the G League when he was so effective. I kind of wanted to see him playmake a little bit more with us, but it's just tough with Lou because Lou is clearly the best playmaker on the team. And he has really good instincts in cutting to the basket too, and just getting to little spots in the paint. So sometimes you don't realize that he might be best off being a playmaker on the team. But then yesterday he really showed like what he can do with the ball in his hands. So that was awesome to see. He probably is one of our more versatile offensive players, which is crazy when you look at his splits. But then whenever he gets to the paint, you know, it's like a bucket because he has that awesome – he does really good these little hook shots where he protects the ball with his body. He's really good finishing around the rim with layups. Like, he's just a really crafty, heady player. And we already knew this last year. I think the most positive thing for him that developed this game was, like you said, the Ty Wallace, Mike Scott minutes, because I think we both kind of figured – a lot of Clipper fans figured – that Luke would pretty much just absorb Ty Wallace's minutes when Luke does eventually come back, if he ever comes back, man. Who knows with Luke at this point. but we all kind of figured that Luke would just take Ty's minutes and Mike Scott would still be a fixture in the rotation because of his shooting. But maybe that won't be the case. Maybe maybe Ty Wallace is kind of coming in front of Mike in the rotation as far as the minutes go. You know, yesterday's game was kind of wonky. I don't know for sure if this is Doc's decision to, you know, cut Mike Scott out of the rotation a little bit more, because the minutes were kind of weirdly distributed a little bit yesterday. But it would be a positive thing for Ty Wallace if he does end up taking some of Mike Scott's minutes. Obviously, if we have Ty Wallace and Luke playing, assuming Luke comes back maybe in the next couple of weeks, that's going to hurt our spacing, and that might lead to problems down the road. But it's so hard to deny this guy minutes at this point. Like, he's playing so well. And you're right. I mean, plus 16 minutes and 13 minutes in a 5-point loss, it's just kind of undeniable. And like, plus minus can be deceiving, but man, Ty Wallace was good. You really felt him. His presence was great. That fourth quarter was awesome. He really infused energy in the second quarter too. He was just so good. He's just a super crafty player. I just wish he had like made one more thing, you know, that he could hit free throws or he could hit threes. Cause it's really frustrating when Ty Wallace is on a roll, brings the team back into the game, and then misses two free throws in a row, like at the line. It's like, come on, bro, you got to give me a little bit more there. But his positive impact is undeniable. And I love that he's a Clipper, man. Like, I was afraid last year that he would get lost in the shuffle of everything. We've had multiple podcasts talking about how there was a chance that he just might not be brought back, but he's a Clipper, and he's really showing every time he's been on the floor. I feel like for the most part this season, he's done something good. And that goes beyond what many bench players can say about themselves. So I think Ty Wallace was great. Montrez and Lou Williams continue to be good together. Montrez was awesome yesterday. 4 blocks, 6 assists, 9 boards, 21 points, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. Really didn't do anything wrong. Lou took some, you know, had some bad turnovers and took some, maybe some questionable shots, thinking he had some contact a few times. And of course had the turnover to close the game, where he got clearly fouled. But I thought Lou played really well too. 7 of 14. He had the 3 that tied the game. Really not much to be said about either of those guys. They're good together. They're good. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I really have too much else to say about that game. And to be quite honest, I really don't have much to say about the Hornets or the Nuggets game either. The Hornets win was honestly one of the best games they've played this season, I think. Their defense was pretty good. Even though the Hornets got to 109, a lot of that came in garbage time. Their defense was good. They really shut down Walker. Though Walker did miss a bunch of open shots. Their offense looked really good. But at the same time, it was a home game against the Hornets. Just, again, another team that kind of started out pretty well but has really fizzled over the past month, month and a half. And Walker has too, actually. People still think he's having
a
superstar season.
Yeah.
And I love Kemba Walker, but he's fallen off very hard over the past few weeks, probably because he's carrying a really bad roster.
His splits against the West are crazy. Kemba, it's like they showed his splits against the West, and they're ridiculous. And what happened to Nick Batum, man? Like, what happened to this guy?
He was so good.
He's
low-key probably had one of the more disappointing careers of anybody in the past decade, I'd say, of anybody who was pretty good and then just fell off suddenly for no reason. Like, I just...
Yeah.
He was, I think the best season of his career was his like second or third year. He was like 21, 22. And then he was like kind of plateaued for a few years in Portland. And then he's just been bad for most of his time with the Hornets.
Man,
like, he's not
crazy.
Good. He was really fun to watch early in his Blazers career too. He was really athletic, could pass, could shoot. Their roster is a nightmare. I don't even know who their second best player is. Cody Zeller probably is, but he's out.
Jeremy Lamb?
Lamb. And then after that, it's like
crazy.
Marvin Williams, maybe? Yeah. Kemba deserves better. And then the game at Denver, Denver is just a better team. They have all the depth the Clippers have, but they have like one of the 10 best players in the league, probably, in Nikola Jokic. I mean, I don't know. You could probably find him in like the lower, you know, from 10 to 15 too, but I wouldn't quibble with somebody who put him in like the 9th or 10th best player in the NBA. He's like a true legit superstar, absolutely destroyed the Clippers, and top tier centers have done that all year. Jokic is not the first. He's not going to be the last. But I was, you know, I wasn't fine with that loss. They got blown out. But the Nuggets are a better team. They're playing on the road. Denver's always a really tough place to play. And, like, that came, I think we were talking about this before the pod came on, and I think you summed it up perfectly. It came and it went, you know. It was
another
NBA season.
Another bad first quarter that game. We're down 37 to 25, and pretty much that was the game for the most part. I mean, they lost the third and the fourth quarters, but not by crazy amounts. And these first quarters are really killing the Clippers, and they can't afford to have those games against better teams because they're not going to be able to catch up. The Nuggets are just good. That's a good team. And Malik Beasley is even really good. Like, I feel like they don't have any bad players. It's pretty crazy how deep they are. And the fact that they've been injured so much throughout the season and are going to get healthier, I wonder how legit they're going to be. We'll see how legit they're going to be as the season goes on. But they look pretty legit. And Jokic is, by all means, a top 10 player this season. I think that's pretty undeniable. He put out a pretty effortless triple-double against the Clippers, and he didn't even play 30 minutes. Pretty awesome stuff.
And he went off today.
What'd he do today? I didn't see the box.
He, against the Blazers, he had 40, 10, and 8.
Whoa, jeez. Oh, I just saw that.
Today. Today was a great NBA day. It's actually one of the more – Steph Curry went off. He had 48 points.
48.
I didn't see that game. But the Raptors-Wizards game was awesome. Leonard and Beal were going at it. They both cleared 40 points. It was a lot of fun. Sometimes it's more
Beal,
fun when the
Beal had a beefy
on.
Triple-double, right? Beal is a beast.
Yeah. There's a Twitter question about him.
Oh, good.
But
the answer is yes. I would like Bradley Beal. Would I trade Avery Bradley for Bradley Beal? Yes, I would.
With that being said, I don't think I really have too much else. Do you have anything else you want to say before Twitter questions?
No, not really.
Okay, the very first question is actually about Beal. From, this is a new person. I don't think I've seen him before, but at Phil IVM, Phil I Am. Is Beal worth considering to trade for, even if it meant Tobias? Yes. And
oh,
yes.
yeah.
He's actually younger than Tobias, or they're around the same age, and he's much better than Tobias. He's locked up for another 2 years at a very reasonable salary. I don't think his current pace with that wall is sustainable, just because Scottie Brooks is playing him like 40 minutes a night, and it's boosting his numbers a little bit. But, I mean, he's very good. He would be the best player on the Clippers by a fairly significant margin. I mean, he's going to make the All-Star game easily. And right now, I mean, the way he's playing, he's on pace to maybe be in consideration for, like, third-team All-NBA. Nobody on the Clippers is close to that. I would trade Tobias and Jerome and any other salary filler. Shea? Probably not. But I think I'd probably trade every other asset on the team for Beal.
Yeah, Beal's a monster. I would trade anything for Beal outside of Shea. And I would imagine if the Wizards did trade Beal and had the Clippers in consideration, they wouldn't do it without getting somebody like Shea back, because it makes no sense, really, otherwise. Like, what, are you going to trade
for
Tobias and sign him to Supermax? Like, I don't really know the end game. You might as well just have, I don't know, you might as well just have Beal. Beal is really good. And his injury problems.
I don't
problems,
think they're trading him.
Yeah, I don't think they would be silly to trade him. He's there. I don't think he's causing any of the locker room stuff. Well, I mean, Wall is who they want to get rid of, and he's just kind of a sunk cost right now. I don't know if they'll be able to trade him for anything. It's a pretty sad situation in Washington. Poor Scott Brooks, UCI alum. I feel bad for him, but it's tough.
I don't think they're trading Beal, and I don't think a deal gets done without Shea. Yeah, they have no reason to trade for Tobias, and Jerome and a first is just not good enough. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're trading him anyway, but yes, I would trade for him. Next question from common question asker James at Don's Clips Pass. Does Doc's persistence with Bradley point to the fact that the advanced analytics department, or whatever it's called, doesn't have a lot of sway with him? This is a really interesting question. Because
good question.
I'm actually going to write a little bit about this, or touch on the subject, during my article, which, again, hopefully actually happens. But I'm legitimately curious as to this. And if I was in LA and had more drive and just was had more hunger to do like a really, really in-depth story on this, I would poke around the Clippers analytics and front office and see what they think about Bradley. Because Doc has been talking about, but that makes sense. But Ralph and Corey went to bat for him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the broadcast is usually, to some extent, a mouthpiece of the team. And I just wonder if they really like him that much, or if the front office realizes he's bad, but is still trying to drive up his trade value and or appease Doc. And I don't have the answer to that. As for Doc's playing him, I think Doc legitimately thinks he's good. And what that says about the Clippers advanced analytics department, how good it is and how much influence they have over Doc, you know, kind of speaks for itself. Unless they have some crazy numbers that say Bradley is really good, I can't imagine how
they don't
exist when literally every number in existence says he's been the worst player on the Clippers. I'm guessing either their advanced analytics department isn't that good. I wouldn't want to say that because I'm sure whoever they have is very good. I'm guessing Doc just not an analytics guy. He's old school. And it could honestly be that the front office wants him to play Bradley anyway, just for the trade value thing. I'm also going to talk about that because there's no way his trade value is going up with the way he's playing. But
nope.
If they bench him, that's a very sure way to tank any trade value he has. So, you know, that's a very tangled issue. I mean, what do you think about all of that?
That's a really good question because you would imagine – I can't imagine an advanced analytics team saying that Bradley is good. It almost makes me feel like they're just like, they have all these resources. It almost makes me think like it's a sitcom where we have this team that, you know, has been giving us stats and is talking to the front office, but they know not to talk to Doc seriously about Bradley because Doc just has an irrational love for Bradley. And I mm-hmm. feel like that might be what's going on. Like we have a team, we have a great, up and down the franchise right now. We have a lot of really good things going on. And I definitely think that we have people looking at advanced stats because Bomber is smart enough to make sure that's utilized. But like, it's just like the press, these pressers with Doc where people are telling him to his face, you know, it's almost like there should be a qualifier at the end of every question where you say like, instead of Bradley, because every person in the press even is telling Doc, hey, Avery Bradley is bad. Why don't you stop playing him? And Doc literally is just scoffing and saying, well, would you stop Avery Bradley? Yeah, you know, nobody wants to. He's almost like a bully when it comes to defending Avery Bradley. Like, it's just like his guy. That's just his guy. And,
yeah,
you know, every you know, person who talked about Doc the GM wanting to get whoever he used to play for, whoever played well against him, it's just being proven right with Bradley, with what's going on with Bradley, that Doc just has these irrational, you know, confidence in players that he's had in the past and he's seen perform well in the past. And he's just holding on to that for Bradley. A good thing, a semi-good thing is, you know, you watch these national broadcasts, a few that we've had, and even those national broadcasters seem to still think Avery Bradley is a tenacious defender or whatever. So there is some hope that maybe some sucker around the league will think that he is good despite whatever front office executives or / analytic people tell them. And maybe we'll take a chance on him for like second rounders or something, but it's just frustrating. I feel like Doc has done so much good this season with how he's managed rotations, but this is just a massive blemish. At least Bradley, you know, let's hope at least Bradley's minutes come south of 25 rather than north of it, so that he's not just playing all those empty minutes. Because, yeah, and as far as the question goes, like, I do think, like, if our analytics team, probably just like our people in the press eventually will get to, just know that Doc has an irrational amount of love for this guy. And almost like how we've got into. It's like we were in the media, I guess, and we've been beaten to this point where we might not even talk about him so much going forward because we just know that as much as we hate this guy as a basketball player, and sometimes even as a person, no, I'm kidding, but as much as we hate this guy, it's almost moot talking about how he shouldn't be playing minutes because the guy is being enabled by his coach. And it's just really frustrating because I don't think there's much that anybody can tell Doc that will change what he's doing with Avery. And that's a huge shame because we're loaded at guard and we can play other people. And we have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who we want to, you know, instill confidence in. And yet we're playing him alongside this mediocre player, and we're playing that mediocre player instead of him, even with everything possible showing that it's the wrong move. And it really sucks. It's almost nullifying a lot of what Doc is doing as a coach. And I don't want to say that because there's enough people bashing Doc, but he's making a huge mistake with Bradley. And it's almost like a sunken cost that we have to accept, not just as media, but probably as a lot of people within the Clipper organization, where they just kind of accept that Doc just loves this guy. Like, he's one of Doc's guys. Sucks.
I mean, I think I agree with that. And I want to move on to other questions. And again, we're trying not to talk about Bradley too much, which is tough when most of the questions are about him. But Jeannie Zelasco, who I'm sure everybody listening knows is, you know, part of the broadcast, she's pretty active on Twitter, and she has had a few tweets over the past few days, not going so far as to bash Bradley, but to say it's becoming hard to defend him. And she, I wouldn't say I got in an argument with her, but we had a few tweets back and forth like a month or two ago where she was defending Bradley, and she's clearly changed. I mean, she's probably not as far as most media and fans are, but she's clearly come around, and at some point, you know, that means that if she's saying that publicly, there are probably some people in the organization, if not a lot, who feel the same way. So anyway, that's all for that question.
Yeah.
Kind of a related question from my dad on Twitter, Richard Flom. 25 more days. Any Clippers involved trades, even a scent of a rumor? I, again, not super plugged in, mostly hear about stuff from other people, if at all. I have not heard anything about a Clippers trade. I haven't seen any credible news rumor about one in weeks, if not months. And, yeah, I don't think any trade is imminent. This Clippers front office does operate in stealth, though. You know, the Blake Griffin trade, as penned last week by Kevin Arnovitz and Jovan Buchwalter, came absolutely out of nowhere. They kept that shit locked down with the Pistons. So if there is a trade, I don't necessarily think it'll be broadcast. Bradley can't be traded till the 15th anyway for everybody asking about him. So if there are rumors, that they won't even start popping up until then, but I haven't heard anything or seen anything about a trade.
Yeah, no, nothing. I haven't really been looking particularly, but I haven't.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything. But yeah, like you said, I don't know if we would hear anything, even if there was a small trade that was brewing.
Yeah, and I made a trade article last week just based on what I think the Clippers will do. And I honestly, the only player who I think there's a reasonable likelihood that they get moved is Teodosic, just so he can either play elsewhere or they can do, instead of a buyout, just get him out with some dignity so he can return to Europe or just somewhere where he'll get minutes. It's the only player I'd put the odds of a trade at of, like, over 30 is him. I mean, I'd say Gortat is – I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised about a lot of people, but, I mean, I could see a Gortat plus, like, a second-round pick and Thornwell or something for a small upgrade at center. But, I don't really think any trade of any kind is happening, and I haven't seen anything. Next question from Clips Nation writer Kenneth Armstrong. Does how the Clippers handle the signing and prompt trading of Blake hurt their ability to sign free agents in the offseason? Another really good question. I have no idea. The long and the short of it is I have no idea. That's something Lee Jenkins is probably finding out about right now.
Yeah.
I would venture to guess not really. These guys know it's a business. Blake was a pretty unique situation. No other free agent would be coming here in the situation Blake was in, where he was a Clippers born and raised, you know, lifer and was the face of the franchise for nearly a decade and grew up there. Obviously, none of these free agents would be like that. So I don't know how applicable it is. And if anything, I mean, I think the front office just has respect because mostly Jerry West, but I think the rest of their front office definitely has respect, at least among agents, and agents have a lot of power. So I really don't think it'll have a negative impact.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think initially maybe there was some visceral reaction around the league that Blake was done kind of dirty, including from the fans. But a year later, like we were talking about reminiscing about the trade, I think every real basketball pundit, like writer, would say the Clippers won the trade at this point. Like, I don't think yesterday's game would have changed that. And I think a lot of them thought that they won the trade even initially. Like, I do think mm-hmm. like there is the idea around the national media that the Clippers won that trade. And I think for the most part, I don't think people think it's particularly close even that the Clippers won the trade as far as the media goes, and as far as people who are plugged in, you know, Zach Lowe, Kevin Arnovitz types, these people, these talking heads that have credibility. That Kevin Arnovitz piece and that Buha piece on The Athletic, both really great reads, by the way, if anybody missed out on them. So I think the Clippers front office has a lot of people around the league's respect. Jerry West also has something to do with that. And the fact that, you know, they got Winger, they downgraded Doc from that double position. They have a lot of really smart people up there, including in, you know, including in spots that didn't even exist before when the Clippers were hiring people. So I don't think there's like a loyalty issue. Maybe like you can make it out to there that there's maybe, oh, where was the loyalty in the Blake Griffin trade? Does loyalty really exist in the NBA anymore? I mean, how many people are definitive players for a franchise anymore, even? Like, what? James Harden is Giannis, who's only been with the Bucks for a few years, and people are already scared that he might leave. You know, Anthony Davis is practically out of New Orleans already. Where is like the
Harden
loyalty?
Was with the Thunder first anyway.
Right, right, and Harden was with the Thunder, so it's not even like Harden; it was like a lifer. People are just feeling that way about Blake because really he was with the Clippers for so many years, but no other players were with their respective team for that many years. All the best players in the league outside of like a Stephen Curry maybe have been just bouncing from team to team. Kevin Durant is practically a mercenary at this point. So it's so is LeBron James. Like I just don't know. I don't mind either. You know, it would have been nice to see Blake Griffin retire a Clipper, but I did have a very visceral reaction when he got traded, but like it was a good trade and I'm happy for it from a Clippers standpoint. And I already have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to throw all my hopes and dreams on for the future. So I don't think in retrospect now that people are looking at that trade as badly. And, you know, as the team kind of goes on, as Blake Griffin's, you know, contract continues to age sort of poorly, I think it's just going to be looked on better and better. It is an interesting point you made. Individually, all these players are struggling aside from J.J. Redick. And even J.J. Redick's renaissance and his stats this year are like a mild surprise. Like that he's playing this well, kudos to J.J. He's been playing great. And, you know, he was demoted to the bench to start the year even. You have to give J.J. a lot of credit. He really left the Clippers looking kind of a shell of himself. So I have to give J.J. a lot of credit. He's almost the one I expected the least to like rebound this well as a smaller player with little athleticism, depending so much on his movement. So just a ton of kudos to JJ. But Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, these guys are all declining. And Blake Griffin probably the least of the three. But DJ has looked really not good this year. Chris might never be the same again. He might never be healthy again. And Blake, you know, Blake is carrying a huge load right now, but his contract is just as much of a behemoth as any of them. I don't think anybody thinks the Clippers were wrong to kind of say, you know what, we shouldn't tie ourselves to these anchors right now because it's just gonna depress this team forever. And I don't think anyone looking at the Clippers objectively would have thought, man, they really made bad moves. If anything, the front office has been as close to as pristine as you could get in this kind of situation. That the Clippers are so good already right now is incredible. That we're rooting for a winner right now is crazy. And the fact that they could be so good next year, you got to give credit to the Clippers front office. They've been doing every right move for the most part. And that's after a string of really bad moves from Doc and Co. to just maximize that Lob City window. So I don't think anybody's going to hold it against them for what they did to Blake, especially now that the details of the deal are kind of in the forefront rather than the emotion. I mean, the fact that we're okay with it, you know, that says something. We are supposed to be the most loyal to him, and we are. You know, I still love Blake, but I'm glad he's not a Clipper, as weird as it is to say.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I don't think the players will hold it against them. A couple more. We'll try to hit these quick. Young Trill, what's the most the Clips could fetch in an Avery Bradley trade? Again, I don't particularly know.
Yeah.
I'd venture to guess there's some older school front offices or coaches or whatever who would be okay with a couple second round picks or a second round pick and like a fringe prospect like a Sindarius Thornwell. But that doesn't match up salary wise. So I'm really not sure. Like a second round pick or two. A first round pick is a dream. If the Clippers can get a first round pick for him, they should have done that deal. They can't do it until 2 days from now, but that would have to get them immediately. But I have no idea.
Yeah, like some Flaming Hot Cheetos would be good for me, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Really anything. The next question from @CBurba9. Honestly, if our plan is to make the playoffs, should we be looking to acquire a center? Plenty of options that maintain our cap space in Dedmon, Cantor, Vooch. Why won't Doc get rid of Bradley? Two questions in there. The first is, if they do make a trade, I'm guessing it will be to shore up center. As for the options, I don't really want Cantor. He's a big offensive upgrade over Gortat, but he's probably even a worse defender. I suppose like a Gortat and like a second round pick for Cantor wouldn't be the worst trade in the world, but it really doesn't do much for me. Dedmon is probably the best guy off the top of my head who I can think of in that he's actually good. He's a pretty significant upgrade over Gortat and certainly Boban. And I would be willing to get rid of probably a couple seconds for him or Thornwell and the second and Gortat or whatever. I don't know if the Hawks would do that though. They probably want something a little bit better for him. And Vucevic would take too much. He's an expiring, he's really good, but they're not going to keep him after this year. I'd assume they wouldn't. And they'd have to give up a lot to get him. And he just, as good as he is, I don't think he moves the needle for the Clippers to be able to beat, like, I don't think that's enough for them to even beat, like, the second tier teams in the West if they added him. I don't know if that's even enough for them to take down, like, the Thunder or the Nuggets or Rockets in a playoff series, certainly not the Warriors. So I don't think it's worth giving up any real assets for any of them. And why won't Doc get rid of Bradley? We already covered that.
Yeah. I mean, so Dedmon would be an interesting person because he's an expiring. So, I mean, if you could get a Dedmon type, I guess, but really, I mean, while there is some onus on making the playoffs this season, the number one priority is to have flexibility for next summer, and anything that gets in the way of that is just not worth it. And that's why we got Gortat in the first place, just because he's an expiring and he could play some starting center minutes. You know, if we could get Dedmon, that would be great, because I think he has like $6 million on the books, and that's a nice little expiring. We could maybe, I don't know what you would even want a couple for him particularly. I like all of our contracts that are on the books for next season, and I would love for all of them to get play. So I don't really want to get rid of any of our contracts that we have tied for next season. You know, it would make sense to try and trade a Gallinari type, but like we've mentioned last couple of pods, he's been fantastic and a really nice Clipper, and he'd be coming off the books next season anyways. So, and you know, we have Lou and we have Trez and we have the rookies. Like these are all good deals, and I'm not really particularly excited to like get rid of any of them. The Clippers don't really have bad deals. So it's just really a matter of staying flexible more than anything. It would be nice to get an upgrade at center. It'd be nice to get an upgrade at the two, I guess. Not even, because we have them already. But really, it's just staying flexible. So that's my priority right now as far as these Clippers go. And I'm not really looking at like the losses that are building up for the seventh and the eighth seeds as much as I'm looking at the ninth seed and the tenth seed, because I want the Clippers to stay in the playoffs. I've already kind of accepted they're probably not going to have home court. And if they make the playoffs, it's a win. And it's an unexpected win. And it's a win going forward for the franchise, showing Kawhi Leonard, you know, Durant, Kyrie, blah, 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 all these people that, hey, you can win with this team and we're going to be keeping a lot of these pieces. And if you want Tobias and we can't get a second star, we can keep Tobias and things like that. So really, that should be a priority. Kanter and Vucevic, like, those guys are on the books for next year, aren't they? Like, I'm not particularly...
Kanter, I believe, is... Vucevic isn't expiring, but, I mean, that makes him less attractive to me because he's, you know, they'd have to give up a lot for a guy who would...
Right.
I think getting Vucevic would guarantee a playoff spot at the least, but I still don't think it gets them a round win. And,
right, right. Yeah.
You know, I just don't know. I'm assuming they'd have to give up a first plus Gortat plus something else to get Vucevic. I mean, he's been really good. The Magic aren't just going to let him walk for, you know, Thornwell in a couple seconds. So I just don't think he's worth it. I think Dedmon is the perfect mix of you probably wouldn't have to give up too much. He's a legit upgrade. But even then, I just don't know if there's a fit. Last question from Lob City Bandwagon. When Luke gets back, I don't even know. Is Doc going to remove Avery from the rotation or not?
Oh my God. That's some great optimism there. No, Avery Bradley is going to stay. It looks like maybe Mike Scott might lose minutes / Ty Wallace.
I think Mike Scott would get cut from the rotation.
Seems like it. But, I mean, this kind of seems like what's heading, which would be fine, I guess. I agree with you, by the way. I love Mike Scott. I still think he has a ton of intangibles, and you have to respect his shot because he's just been, a career quality shooter. But the way Ty is playing, and if Bradley's not going to get cut from the rotation, then it would probably be Mike Scott at this point. It kind of sucks. He's Mike Scott is so much better than Avery Bradley.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I think that's it. I don't really have particularly anything else to say. This does mark the week. This is the week when Bradley is now trade eligible. I don't think he's going anywhere, but it's now possible he can go elsewhere after it being actually impossible that he would get traded. It is now possible. I still don't think he's going to get moved. I don't know if this week will be the week where Beverly starts instead of Shea, but I think it's coming any time now. Honestly, this upcoming game, we probably would have heard already, but it might be this upcoming game because Shea has not played well against the Pelicans this year, I don't think. I don't remember the second game, actually, but I remember the first game. It was one of the first games of the season, and he did not play well. So I wonder if tomorrow might actually be the game when Pat starts over him, but we'll see. I don't have anything else, though. The Clippers have four tough games this upcoming week. They play home against New Orleans Monday, home against Jazz Wednesday, home against Golden State Friday, then at San Antonio Sunday. So we're going to do – next week will be a four-game pod.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? I'd say 2-2 would be pretty good. The Pelicans and Jazz are games they should theoretically win at home. But Davis is going to absolutely destroy them. Gobert will probably also absolutely destroy them. I could see 0-4, to be quite honest. That would be really bad. I could see it happening, though. And then the schedule lightens up a ton, the last week and a half of January. But, I'm predicting, I'll say 1-3. I don't know where the one comes. I guess I'm guessing they get one. 2-2 would be great. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Before the last thing before we end this,
I'll go with 2-2 optimistically. I think they can beat New Orleans. I think they can beat Utah, and I think they might lose the next two. I also think they could maybe instead of split the Utah and the San Antonio game. They've obviously been really trash against the Spurs the last couple of games, but I know the Spurs are playing well, but man, I don't know, man. Maybe I just trust Pop. I just can't take that team that seriously. And they don't have Rudy Gay right now. I don't believe. And Rudy Gay has torched the Clippers. So, I mean, I'm hoping that they can show up in that San Antonio game. I don't know what the opposition schedules are, but it's nice that the Clippers have a game off in between all these games, or a day off in the schedule. So that is a good thing. They will eventually be playing a third and fourth next week against the Heat in Miami on a travel game. So hopefully that's not a schedule loss, but that'll be, actually that from that Spurs game, they're playing 4 in 6 days, which is brutal. I don't know why this happens anymore in the NBA. From the 20th to the 25th, they're playing 4 games in 6 nights in all different cities on the road. Oh gosh. So hopefully, and they're playing bad teams to end that stretch in Chicago, in Miami. So if they lose either of those games, it would really hurt them. But anyways, that's looking forward a bit. I'm hoping for 2-2. I think 2-2 would be good. I think 3-1 is an outside possibility, but kind of optimistic. The Warriors are playing better too. So, and DeMarcus Cousins is supposed to come back for that game, or at least around that game. So that first game back, though, with a new piece, and if he's starting, is always awkward. So that could maybe help the Clippers if he does come back on the 18th. But I'm hoping for 2-2. I'll say 2-2.
Yeah, that's it. That's it for me. I say 1-3. Hopefully you're correct, or the 3-1 can even happen. But we'll see. Tomorrow could be rough. I'm predicting – I wouldn't bet against Davis having a 40-15.
Oh, gosh. Yep, and I think that'll do it for this episode of the Lob the Gem, the podcast. Let's hope the Clippers go 2-2. Honestly, with how they've been playing, even 2-2 might be optimistic, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And we'll see you guys next week. As always, go Clippers!